This episode of Bend the Knee is brought to you by Lord Hunter the Foulmouthed, Captain of the Guard. His watch is constant.
Hello and welcome to Bend of the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt, the Bud Knight.
And I am Sir Ezra the Watchful. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we're into chapter 52, John 7 of A Game of Thrones. And in Fire and Blood, we will be discussing the dying of the dragons, the blacks and the greens.
Yeah, man. Dance of the Dragons, it's here. We've talked about it a little bit with... we did a Patreon episode, right, on the Rogue Prince. That's kind of where that starts. Then you have the Princess and the Queen, the Blacks and the Green, which is that other novella.
Yep.
And if you find Fire and Blood a little too dry, which I sometimes do, you can find the audiobook version of that novella on YouTube, and it's actually read by the guy who plays Jorah Mormont. That's how I found it. And yep. I just ripped it off YouTube. That's also some cool kind of study material for the Dance of Dragons. It's also covered in A World of Ice and Fire. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be where we're at for about the next 3 weeks. And it's a huge, huge event. And I kind of, as I've said before, consider it kind of the precursor to the Blackfyre Rebellions. A lot of similar events kind of happen and take place. And super awesome that we're here.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, they've updated the wiki, so if any of you are into the Song of Ice and Fire wiki page, they've updated a lot of that. I just went and looked with the Dance of Dragons stuff, and that is all good to go, and there's a lot more information in there. If you're looking for a quick condensed version, you can find that there for sure. So,
yeah, absolutely.
All right, man. Well, small council, updates on life. How's it going?
Man, you know, Sir Ezra, things are going good, man. Really busy over here. We got, a lot more stuff coming down the pipe here for Bend the Knee. You and I have some other projects, which, we also work on other podcasts, stuff like that, which people have been asking us cause we've just said it in passing what other podcasts we are involved with. So Sir Ezra, what other podcasts are you involved with?
Yeah, I am involved in a couple of different ones. I run a, Lord of the Rings podcast with my buddy Lane, and it's called An Unexpected Podcast, Up Talking Tolkien, so covering all sorts of good things there, doing a reread and looking at the new show that's coming up. And then I am also in a Star Wars podcast with my buddy Mike, and we just kind of do, we're really a speculation podcast. We really just speculate about episode 9 and kind of go over some of the news, you know, there. So that's called Rebel Watch, an all Star Wars podcast.
Yeah. And if you go back and you listen to some of the older episodes, I used to do a lot of stuff.
Oh yeah,
on that podcast as well before I moved out here to Portland. And I also do a video game podcast called Box Trick. Do a lot of Legend of Zelda, you know, Skyrim, all kinds of different stuff. I do music covers and stuff like that on the YouTube side of that. So yeah, people have asked us, and Sir Ezra and I, as we've mentioned before, we have some new stuff coming down the pipe here.
Yes, we do.
In the podcasting world, Sir Ezra and I are pretty much working 7 days a week podcasting at this point.
At this point, we are. Yeah, it's crazy.
Not full time yet, but right. eventually we'll get there. But so
Sir Matt, I would say it's something awesome. You know, that's what I'd say.
It is something awesome. So. Yeah, it is something quite awesome. Yeah. And so, and I used to, Sir Ezra and I actually used to run a YouTube kind of fitness channel called Super Gains Bros, which is my Instagram, Twitter handle, which I'm actually also getting kind of going again. You know, it took me a couple months to put down the fork and get back into kind of lifting kind of weight. But, feel good about that. Well, but unfortunately, it's going to be hard because we have Game of Thrones Oreos coming out.
I know. Yeah, I saw that. that's epic, by the way. That is so cool. I can't believe they're doing that. We're getting a pack, right? I mean, we're going to.
I'm getting like, Seven Kingdoms, seven packs.
Yeah.
you know what I mean?
Oh, man.
But, I was trying to find pictures. Do they look different, or are they just Oreos in a Game of Thrones packaging?
The actual Oreos themselves. Let me look.
Right.
There's a picture here. I wanted to kind of zoom in on it if I could. I thought that the Oreo itself looked a little different. Maybe I'm wrong.
Looked a little different. Yeah. Does it have like a Lannister head on it, or something like that?
That would be sick if it did.
That would be. I'm somewhat of an Oreo connoisseur.
Yeah.
I remember when they released the red velvet Oreos, you know, I had to go try those. Then there is the double stuff Oreo, then there's like the mega stuff. Now there's the ultra stuff Oreos, which you open it up and there's like five Oreos in the case. Which is just absurd, because as an Oreo connoisseur, you know, the serving size should just be the whole damn pack, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, you don't just sit down and eat, like, you know, it's like two cookies. It's like, who eats two cookies?
Nobody.
Okay? Nobody. It's like when you get, it's Girl Scout season, right?
Yep.
It's like Thin Mints. You just you're eating the whole sleeve. It shouldn't be based upon like three cookies. It should be based upon one sleeve of Thin Mints, just as it should be based upon one pack of Oreos. And you better factor in some milk.
Right.
You know,
yeah, they should just say 1,000 calories per sleeve. Like, that's what they should say. Like,
exactly. Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Now, you're more of a Chips Ahoy kind of a guy, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm more of it. Yeah. Oreos, like, I do like them, but I mean, it's like, I don't know. I've got to have like several glasses of milk, and I don't know. It just, I got to be in the right mood for Oreos. But yeah, Chips Ahoy is my go to.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. But I was stoked. I think it's cool because they've got the O's, like just the font. It works. It looks really solid. It looks really good. So I looked at the Oreos too. It doesn't look like they're going to be fancier make, you know, on the actual whatever cookie part. But who knows? Maybe there'll be some secret.
Right.
Yeah. There.
Remind me to email Oreo and see if we can get like a promotional pack early or something.
Yeah.
You know, or maybe a giveaway, like, hey, can we you know, can we work can we work with Oreo and Game of Thrones to send some people some Oreos?
Gosh, that'd be great. That'd be so great.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. In other news, Sir Ezra, did you see the pictures? They released, I think, 20 promotional pictures of just about all of the main characters sitting on the Iron Throne to get ready for the final season. So that was pretty cool.
Oh yeah, I'm looking at it now. Yeah.
Wow. And you know, people are freaking out because you know, there's like, it's pretty much every character, but it includes like the Night King. I think Melisandre is one of them. And so it's just 20 images. Let me pull this up here. Yeah, we have Daenerys, Jaime, Cersei, an advertisement for RAV4. Oh wait, here we go. just check. Davos, Bran, Arya. Not Wormtail. Oh god, what's his name? Grey Worm.
Oh yeah, Grey Worm. Really?
You got me thinking Lord of the Rings. Well, here. Yeah. The Hound, yeah. Sansa, Brienne of Tarth, Jon Snow, even Missandei. Night King, Tyrion, Euron, Melisandre, Jorah Mormont, Theon, Samwell Tarly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Varys, I think that's it. Yeah. So, so interesting that, you know, because some characters get left out. I mean, you know, where's Podrick Payne?
Right.
And where's Bronn? I guess those characters guess don't have any shot of sitting the Iron Throne. So I guess it's got to be one of these 20 who has the chance of sitting the Iron Throne.
Did you say Brienne of Tarth is on there? Is she one of them?
Yeah, she's one of them.
Wow. Wow. That's radical. Yeah.
Wait, I'd be fine if Samwell Tarly set the Iron Throne.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you see the?
I'm just gonna say it's interesting that, you know, the same day that they release these promotional pictures is the same day they release the promotional Oreos. You know, so is there a connection between Samwell Tarly and Oreos and the Iron Throne? That's the kind of rabbit holes we're going down. Yeah. You know, as we get closer to.
Oh my gosh, a man eats Oreos. Wow.
Yeah.
I saw one of the tweets here, and that link you sent me is like a picture of Bran sitting the Iron Throne and then the Night King, and somebody was like, you know, silly Game of Thrones, are these the same thing or the same picture?
Right.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's so cool. That's great.
Yeah. So, Sir Ezra, who are you leaning towards now?
Sitting?
You know, sitting the Iron Throne at the end.
Wow. I honestly... Well, seeing those photos now, it really could be someone unexpected. I mean, even though you have Danny, John,
right.
One of those characters is going to go. One of them is going to die. And this is, again, just my opinion. Do I know some of the producers and the writers and what have? Yes, but, you know, so spoilers, I guess. John, I feel like... It's going to be someone unexpected, man. I don't know. I can't even really put like a... I want to see Tyrion there. You know, I want to see Tyrion Lannister there for some reason, just because I like him so much. I think it's too, you know, obvious that it's... We're thinking Dany, you know, or Jon, but I just don't see that. I don't know how... That seems too... that just doesn't seem like Gurr to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, I'm with you. I get it, yeah.
So, I don't know. Who are you thinking? The Hound? What do you got, you know?
To sit the Iron Throne, actually, the more... I don't know, man. Now I'm kind of on this idea of Samwell Tarly sitting the Iron Throne.
Yeah.
Because I think I could just see, like, after the battle's up... I'm with you. I think that if Daenerys dies, I don't know that Jon Snow would want it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just don't see Jon Snow as the kind of guy who who wants to be... He was chosen Lord Commander. He was chosen King in the North. He didn't ask for it. It's not like he was Rob. I mean, Rob, it was kind of bestowed upon him as well. But Rob was like, there was more kind of politicking, you know, just like a little bit more, right? Because he's like, we're riding south, we're rebelling, all this stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas John's stuff has always been through survival. So if like the Night King and Cersei are gone and he's left... I don't know that I don't think he would care. So I could see him it's like he's also like he's like, my watch has ended. Like, I'm done with the Night's Watch.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I could just see him not being like, if Daenerys is gone, like, I don't think he would care about it.
Right.
So
let's look at the major
houses.
What? Go ahead.
You know, hold on a second. Was Sansa in that group? Did I say Sansa?
I don't know. I couldn't see. I didn't see the... I need to go look.
Now I got to go back and look because...
Yeah, could she?
I could see her sitting the Iron Throne.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. That'd be cool. I was just thinking, like, looking at the houses, the Lannisters, you know, I mean, you've got Cersei, but then she's out of kids.
Yeah, she is.
I don't really know. I don't really know who's next. And if you look at all the major houses, Lannister, I just don't see them sitting there. The Starks have a lot of opportunity. You know, when have we had, you know... Yeah, I mean, that'd be kind of weird to have a Stark sitting on the Iron Throne of all things when they're the kings in the North. I mean, that's sort of different.
Right.
So you could see that. I also don't, like, unless Stannis is still alive, there are no Baratheons, you know. Okay.
And Stannis is probably still alive, but.
Yeah. And then the Tyrells are gone, you know. You've got House Martell is got some options, I guess. You know, maybe they could, you know, his daughter and, you know, could ascend. I don't know. It, like, in the show, the way they've set it up, there's just not a lot of players left, you know?
Yeah. So, now, this is, of course, show only. The books
totally different.
Yeah.
I just have no idea. There's going to need to be a great council. They'll have to elect a leader, you know? So
I don't know, because if John dies, see, I don't know that John's gonna die.
Yeah,
I think it's more likely that Daenerys dies than John, because I think if John were to die after being like resurrected, just from the show point, right? Because the show, you have to kind of take some of Gurr's ideas and control out of.
Yeah.
Because I think that the book's ending is probably going to be way more gruesome, right, than the show.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, it's like if Jon Snow dies, it would just be kind of, I don't know, it'd be bad. It would be like bad storytelling.
Yeah.
Unless
yeah.
it's done in such, because he's already died and then he almost dies again.
Yeah.
Right. In the Battle of the Bastards. And then he almost dies again when Daenerys has to fly in and save him.
Yeah.
So if you were to just save him to like kill him, just, you know, so that's why to me it seems much more likely that Daenerys dies and then a Targaryen, or maybe like Daenerys dies thinking, you know, the Targaryen line has ended. And then it's like, no, wait. Jon is a Targaryen. You know what I mean? And I don't know. Yeah.
No, I see that. Because, you know, she had a lot of.
So maybe that reveal is after she's died or something. I don't know.
Yeah. She also had a lot of, you know, success just taking over Meereen and, you know.
Right. Yeah.
So, young guy, what have you. She's just rolling through there pretty easily. So, yeah, in the end, maybe she, you know, it looks like she's going to prevail, but doesn't.
And, you know, Gurr does draw a lot from other writings. And so. Yeah. When I think of, because to me, Jon Snow is, he has some similarities in my mind, in just thinking of a type of character to Aragorn, right?
Yeah.
And then, of course, like in Lord of the Rings, Aragorn like becomes king at the end, but he didn't choose it. He didn't want to be like king. Yeah. So I could see it being somewhat similar.
Yeah,
because that's a huge inspiration for him and stuff like that. So
right, yep, that would be cool. I don't know. I'd like to hear what. That's a good question. We should do like a poll or something. Like, you know, who sits the Iron Throne? Facebook, you know, group discussion. Like, you get one pick. Who is it? You know what I mean? At the end.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
is it the Night King? I mean, like, come on, you know. So
in the show, there's no way.
In the show, yeah.
There's no way.
Right.
Unless it's Bran, and Bran is also the Night King.
And Bran is also the Night King, yeah. So there's always a way. There's. I'm just kidding. Beric Dondarrion, man. Let's go. I'm still, you know, people get on me for it, but, you know, we can.
So, all right, man.
Yeah.
All right, so should we head on over to our Maester's study? Any other news? Anything we need to announce? Or
no, I mean, we'll come back next week. We'll have some more updates for you guys, just on, you know, what we're planning on doing and some of the collabs we've got scheduled and what have you and all that good stuff. But today, yeah, let's just jump into the Maester's study here. It's you know, as Sir Matt said, we're covering the dying of the dragons, the blacks and the greens, and so the next several weeks we'll have sort of this. Discussion about the Dance of Dragons. Last week we were kind of talking about Viserys and how, you know, he came to the throne and some of the stuff at the end of the chapter that I didn't really get to. I guess I'll recap because I kind of you know, was looking at this today. I was like, oh yeah, we're reading Heirs of the Dragon, and Sir Matt's like, no, we're blacks and the greens. So anyways,
yeah, Sir Ezra read the wrong chapter.
I read the wrong chapter, yeah. But I mean, I've actually read this one already. It's just when we go back, I like to read them again. Because they're, you know, this one's not as long though. The last several have been 50
have been
pages
really
or
long.
More.
Yeah, this one's short, and it's kind of a rehash of World of Ice and Fire. And I will actually, I have the ebook, so I'll pull up World of Ice and Fire book, and we'll see kind of some of the comparisons here.
Yeah, but just real quick and recap some of the things we didn't get to that I thought were interesting in my reread, which of the last week's chapter, was the idea that Rhaenyra Targaryen, just her being enamored with Sir Criston Cole, you know, was pretty cool, and laying that foundation. We didn't talk too much about it. We've done it in Patreon and what have you, but she's really, you know, he wears her favor in a lot of tourneys, and he's just a cool character, and I felt like if they ever did a show, you know, based upon the Dance of Dragons, there's a lot leading into the dance. You could have several seasons worth of stuff. That would be interesting. You know, you could just start with the passing of the old king and then move right into Viserys and his reign, which leads us right into the Dance of Dragons. So, you know, Rhaenyra is born. Her mother was Emma Arryn, who Viserys was, you know, married to at first. And then at the end here, he ends up going with Alicent Hightower. After Emma dies, he picks up Alicent Hightower and, you know, has several more kids there with her. So but anyways, at the tail end of the last week's chapter, you start to learn about Viserys' brother and just how ambitious he was and how
right.
you know, much he wanted to rule the Iron Throne, and he, you know, and I kind of was thinking in my reread that a way in which he, when he comes back from ruling the Stepstones, and he's the king of the Stepstones, right, and Viserys kind of forgives him, and he starts to court Rhaenyra, because mm-hmm. Alison Hightower has had two sons, and it's pushed him further down the line. So then he goes to, you know, the Realm's Delight, Rhaenyra Targaryen, and he starts to kind of, you know, court her in a sense. Her uncle is and she loves her uncle, you know, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It was just really interesting. So Uncle Daemon Targaryen, man, just, you know, ends up being a big player, you know, in the Dance of Dragons. And so just had to get that little piece in there where he kind of starts this relationship with Rhaenyra. I mean, according to Mushroom and others, there could have been some other really bad thing, you know, some things that happened between Daemon and Viserys. You know, maybe he's upset that his brother's, you know, hooking up with his daughter. I don't know if that's that's a problem, but that's the world that we're in here with Gurr. So anyways, yeah, that's just a quick recap, and then we'll jump into this Dance of Dragons here. If Sir Matt wants to just start
us
off.
Yeah, absolutely.
Here.
Yeah. The Dance of Dragons is the flowery name bestowed upon the savage struggle for the Iron Throne of Westeros fought between two rival branches of House Targaryen during the years 129 to 131 AC. To characterize the dark, turbulent, bloody doings of this period as a dance strikes us as grotesquely inappropriate. No doubt the phrase originated with some singer, the dying of the dragons would be altogether more fitting, but tradition, time, and Grand Maester Munkin have burned the more poetic usage into the pages of history, and so must we dance along with the rest.
Yeah.
Yeah, so as Sir Ezra was saying, you have two principal claimants to the Iron Throne.
Yep.
This is after the death of King Viserys the First, right? So we have Jaehaerys, who we've been talking about, and then they really just didn't even talk about Viserys Targaryen in like Fire and Blood, really.
Yeah,
he's almost completely skipped over.
He's kind of a placeholder, a little bit, and sort of the prelude.
He is kind of a placeholder. So, so upon his death, you have Rhaenyra, the only surviving child of his first marriage, that's Viserys, and Aegon, his eldest son by his second wife.
Yeah,
and so Aegon the second. And so this is where your two, these are your two big players.
Yeah,
and so I have a World of Ice and Fire pulled up as well here from the Viserys stuff, because I just think that there's some important stuff here that kind of
helps us
up
understand it. Yeah.
Where we're gonna be. Yeah, so I'm gonna read the beginning of kind of Viserys the first. This is from World of Ice and Fire.
Okay,
which we covered. A couple months ago. Yeah. I guess. A good kind of rehash here as we're kind of going back over it. After the long and peaceful reign of Jaehaerys the First, Viserys inherited a secure throne, a full treasury, and a legacy of goodwill that his grandfather had cultivated over 50 years. So if you remember, Jaehaerys, mm-hmm. he lived for so long that all of his heirs kept dying.
Yeah.
Right. And that's where that kind of great council came about. Right. And so they chose Viserys, who was, you know, incorrect. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But so Viserys ends up being his heir.
Yeah.
It says House Targaryen was never again so powerful as it was in Viserys' reign. More princes and princesses of the blood existed than any other time since the Doom, and there were never so many dragons at one time as there were in the years 103 to 129 AC. So right after the end of Jaehaerys is where we're at the absolute, like, full power of the Targaryen dynasty, and it's all about to come crashing down here.
Right.
But the great upheaval of the Dance of Dragons had its roots in Viserys' reign, and it was chiefly due to the Blood Royals. In the early part of his reign, Viserys' first chief annoyance was his own brother, Prince Daemon Targaryen, who, as was just talking about, Daemon was Mercurial and quick to take offense, but he was dashing, daring, and dangerous. He was knighted at 6 and 10, like Maegor the First, and Jaehaerys the First himself gave Daemon the Valyrian steel blade Dark Sister for his prowess. He had been among the brashest of Viserys' supporters prior to the Great Council, and had even gathered a small army of sworn swords and men-at-arms when rumors claim that Corlys Velaryon was readying a fleet to defend the rights of his son, Laenor. King Jaehaerys avoided bloodshed, but many remembered that Daemon had been ready to come to blows over the matter. Mm-hmm. So you have Daemon Targaryen, who's kind of a hothead.
Yep.
And is also like super skilled in battle. And he can rally kind of people behind him. Sounds a lot like another Daemon Targaryen / Blackfyre that we know of. So Daemon Targaryen is really kind of coming into his name during Viserys the First reign.
Yeah,
and that's a lot of this is in World of Ice and Fire and The Rogue Prince, which mm-hmm. is another one of those novellas, also read by Jorah Mormont. You can find it on YouTube, the audiobook.
Right. And Daemon is like, as I said, you know, that he's a big deal. And it's crazy that like he did have a lot of like Viserys loved him, and he just knew his brother was just kind of power hungry a little bit. But Daemon also loved his brother. He was never going to do anything to overthrow his brother. He just wanted the crown after him. That's all he wanted. And, you know, he gets upset with him here and there. But remember when Viserys was, during the Council of 101 AC, when Viserys was trying to make his claim for the throne, Daemon was gathering troops to support his brother's claim.
Yes.
You know?
Yes, he was. Yeah,
which is a big deal. So now his brother, Viserys, is king. When he died, before he dies, just to wrap up some of that, several hundred lords show up to King's Landing and pledge their support for his daughter, Rhaenyra, just so that, you know, he made her his heir, and she is the princess of Dragonstone. That is actually originally what upset Daemon. You know, that's what sent him off, like, I should be Prince of Dragonstone. I should be next in line because I'm the next male. And he said, we're good. It's going to be my daughter, Princess Rhaenyra. And then even when, after Emma Arryn dies, his first wife, when he has his second wife, Alicent Hightower, he has a son, Aegon. And his third child was Aemon. Still, he does nothing to change the succession. You know, he does nothing to talk about. He doesn't name Aegon the Prince of Dragonstone because he had already named Rhaenyra. That would, you know, once he did that, I mean, really, you know, he was just kind of ignoring the Council of 101 AC, which ironically was what put him into power instead of,
you know. Oh, I know.
So that's kind of crazy, right? And what's weird is, another thing we should mention is that, like, when Daemon leaves, right, when Daemon, his brother, Daemon Targaryen leaves and goes to the Stepstones, well, first he goes to Driftmark, and he meets with Corlys Velaryon, and they decide, like, you know, Corlys Velaryon, his son, Laenor, and, you know, was the one who was passed over. That whole house was, you know, passed over when they should have been considered, you know, for the crown. And so Daemon kind of unites with them, and that's why Driftmark supports his, you know, claim to be the king of the Stepstones. You know, Corlys Velaryon, even the Sea Snake, like, crowns him king. And then when he comes back, you know, obviously Daemon takes the crown off, puts it at his brother Viserys' feet, and, you know, Viserys is real chill, takes him back in and kisses him, you know, welcome back, what have you. You know, within that year, he starts courting Rhaenyra, and that's what I was talking about. It was just kind of crazy, the setup to all of this, I guess. So, and then he's not, I don't know, I forget what happens exactly to him right after he starts courting Rhaenyra, but there's some big fight, you know, between him and his brother, and he kind of goes away again. Okay, and now is when he'll come back, though, at when his brother dies. So this chapter is about Viserys, you know, dying and what happens immediately after that. And I'm just going to read some of this because it's really,
go right ahead.
Really interesting. I think it's important to understand it, and I don't want to skimp on any of the details. So, the dance was a war unlike any other ever fought in the long history of the Seven Kingdoms. Though armies marched and met in savage battle, much of the slaughter took place on water and especially in the air as dragon fought dragon with tooth and claw and flame. So, you know, that's interesting. A lot of this was just, you know, not ground battle, but it's on the sea, it's in the air, and it's really just Targaryen trying to pick off Targaryen. You know, there's even situations where we'll find out later in the dance that, like, other lords, when a Targaryen would show up to their keep, depending on their alliances, they might try to capture that prince or princess and use them as leverage, you know. So, just crazy. The long-simmering conflict burst into the open on the third day of the third moon of 129 AC, when the ailing, bedridden King Viserys Targaryen closed his eyes for a nap in the Red Keep of King's Landing and died without waking. So there he dies in 129 AC. And again, you know, the blacks, the greens and the blacks, it's already been set up. Sir Criston Cole, by the way, right before this, was wearing the Rhaenyra's favor. He was, you know, a black. I mean, he was on the black side. Because remember, Rhaenyra is a black, and Alison Hightower and Aegon Targaryen, the elder, is a green. So, but yes. Anyways, his body is discovered by a serving man at the hour of the bat, when it was the king's custom to take a cup of wine. The servant ran in to inform Queen Alicent, whose apartments were on the floor below the king's. So now, here you go. So you have the difference between Septon Eustace and the dwarf Mushroom, who was the court jester, right? And everyone thought that Mushroom was a simpleton, as we know, but really, he's very I love that he even, like, he wrote a book about all this, all like the tale, Tales of Mushroom, yeah. You know.
Mushroom, in a way, actually, it's kind of interesting. We had a raven about Patchface. Mushroom is one of these characters that knows a ton of stuff, and he's very shrouded in mystery. He's brought up in everything: World of Ice and Fire, the Rogue Prince, the Blacks and the Green, and now Fire and Blood as well. And so we have a lot of info on him. But you know, do you take him at face value, or I don't know? Do you this? It's kind of interesting because we talk about perspective, especially when we're talking about Fire and Blood and World of Ice and Fire.
Yeah.
Because it's told through the perspective of maesters, and so it would be super easy, in my view, to see that a maester would easily dismiss what Mushroom is saying, but Mushroom may actually be more factual.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting that yeah, like you said, a maester is considering what he has to say, and I think it's because they were just Eustace's just lack in detail sometimes. They're like, some of the things that he says just doesn't make sense, and everyone's thinking that there has to be a different explanation for some of this, and so they turn to Mushroom, who was telling his tales. And sometimes it's like the big question is, when can you believe Mushroom and when can you not? Because let me just read here. When Queen Alicent finds him, you know, the so-called Greens had taken care to instruct all of Viserys' guards and servants in what to do when the day came. So now the dwarf Mushroom suggests a more sinister scenario whereby the queen hurried along King Viserys' death with a pinch of poison in his drink. It must be noted that Mushroom was not in King's Landing the night the king died, but rather on Dragonstone in service with Princess Rhaenyra. So there you go. Maybe some of this is, you know, he's not even there. So how can he comment that there was poison unless he overheard a conversation, which is what he claims. He overheard conversation about it leading up to the king's death. So that's just, but there are other situations later, Sir Matt, where we totally believe Mushroom, right? I mean, where he's extremely believable. So, and then just a little bit here on Sir Criston Cole. Queen Alicent went at once to the king's bedchamber, accompanied by Sir Criston Cole, Lord Commander of the King's Guard. Once they had confirmed that Viserys was dead, Her Grace ordered his room sealed and placed under guard. The serving man who had found the king's body was taken into custody to make certain he didn't spread the tale. So, again, you know, they just don't want this getting out. They've already made preparations as how to deal with the king's death. Let's see. So, yeah, then Sir Criston Cole gathers the small council. And this is kind of interesting. So only five of the White Cloaks were in King's Landing at the time of Viserys' death. Sir Criston himself, Sir Eric Crakehall, Sir Richard Thorne, Sir Stephen Darklyn, and Sir Willis Fell. Sir Eric Crakehall, twin to Sir Arik, and Sir Laurent Marbran were with Princess Rhaenyra on Dragonstone. That's interesting, right? And they remained unaware and uninvolved as their brothers in arms went forth into the night to rouse the house to rouse the members of the small council, because they're about to do something against, you know, King Viserys' wishes, right? You know, they're about to crown Aegon, the king, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah, absolutely.
Which is nuts. That was not supposed to happen. She's on Dragonstone. That Dragonstone is the indicator, right? If you're prince or princess of Dragonstone, that means you're next in line as far as the realm is concerned, right? So, Grandmaster Munkin, you know, in the Dance of Dragons, A True Telling, kind of goes on to talk about, you know, they talk about his history, and they kind of use him as a source here. So let's see. Let me read some of this. The council was convened in the queen's apartment within Maegor's Holdfast. The accounts had come down through Maester Munkin's telling there, I guess. So though Munkin's exhaustive history was not written until a generation later and drew on many different sorts of materials, including Maester's chronicles, memoirs, Stuart's records, and interviews with 147 surviving witnesses to the great events of these times, his account of the inner workings of the court relies upon the confession of Grand Maester Orwyn as set down before his execution. So unlike Mushroom and Septon Eustace, whose versions derive from rumors, hearsay, and family legend, the Grand Maester was present at the meeting and took part in the council's deliberations and decisions. So you've got a Septon Eustace who is giving his account. We always go back and forth between him and Mushroom, but this is the Grand Maester there who's actually summoned to the council. So it must be recognized that at the time that he wrote, he was most anxious to show himself in a favorable light and absolved himself of any blame for what was to follow. Mumpkin's true telling, therefore, paints his predecessor in perhaps too far a favorable light. So let's just get to what happened in that chamber, right? Gathering in the queen's chamber as the body of her lord husband grew colder above Queen Alicent herself, her father, Sir Otto Hightower, by the way, who wasn't a part of the, it says Hand of the King, but he was, you know, at one point dismissed by Viserys. Mm-hmm. So I saw that, Sir Matt, and I was kind of like, wait, earlier he was dismissed because he was tired of hearing Sir Otto Hightower pushing him to name Aegon the heir, but boom, here he is back, Hand of the King. Sir Criston Cole, Lord Commander of the King's Guard, Grand Maester Orlan, I can't even say it, Lord Lyman Beesbury, Master of Coin, and a man of 80, Sir Tywin Lannister, Master of Ships, brother to the Lord of Casterly Rock, Laris Strong, called Laris Clubfoot, Lord of Harrenhal, Master of Whisperers, and Lord Jasper Wild, called Ironrod, Maester of Laws. Grandmaster Mumpkin dubs this gathering the Green Council in his true tellings. So here they are. And they're basically, this is where they kind of talk about how they're going to proceed with the coronation. And it's not a coronation of Queen Rhaenyra. So
No, not at all. Yeah.
Right, right. Sir Otto Hightower, let's see, he's really, behind, he's really pushing the council to act quickly here. Okay. So let me go back over here this real quick, just because someone on this council, Sir Matt, I believe they don't agree with the council, right? And then, doesn't Sir Criston Cole have to step in here?
I can't remember about that.
That was in Fire and Blood.
Is it in Fire and Blood, or is that in World?
I thought so.
Of Ice and Fire. The interesting thing about the Dance of Dragons is that it is now the most covered topic in A Song of Ice and Fire.
Yeah.
Because you have its original telling in the main series, right? Just when it comes up. You've got A World of Ice and Fire, Fire and Blood, and then the Rogue Prince and the Princess and the Queen, the Blacks and the Greens.
Mm-hmm.
So you have five different sources of info coming into the Dance of Dragons.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. So yeah, it's kind of hard because you have different perspectives and things like that.
Right, right. Well, I'm going to have to come back to that to see if I can find exactly who that was, because I swore there was someone who they cut down. Maybe that's later, though, because right now in this moment, no ravens flew that night. No bells rang. You know, when the king dies, we ring the bells. The servants who knew the king's passing were sent to the dungeons, and Sir Criston Cole was given the task of taking into custody such blacks as remained at court. So there you go. He's taking some folks into custody. Do them no violence until they resist, unless they resist. Sir Otto Hightower commanded such men as bend the knee and swear fealty to King Aegon shall suffer no harm at our hands. So they know that there are men, you know, loyal to Rhaenyra here at the Iron, you know, at the Red Keep, and they're taken into custody. I'll come back to that. You know, Lord, forget their vows. Ah, there we go. Let's see. Isn't it
right? Because, well, I don't want to skip too far ahead, but
no, go
Rhaenyra.
Ahead.
Well, it's just because as we know, right? What ends up happening at the end of the Dance of the Dragons, right? Is that, you know, you have Aegon the Second or Aegon the Elder, right? And then you have Aegon the Younger, who is like Aegon the Third, ends up becoming king, right? He ends up becoming king. So you have like Daemon and Rhaenyra's kid, who actually they end up getting what they want, right? She never sits the throne, but he does.
Right. Right, right, exactly.
Right. And
I'm sorry, real quick, I just found it. It's Lord Beesbury. I was wondering why it wasn't I was like, man, there's no way that's not in Fire and Blood. But yeah, the sources, as you say, Sir Matt, as to what happened when Lord Beesbury sort of, he brings up that, like, hey, there are a lot of good, loyal, honorable men who swore allegiance to her. He says, men of honor who will not forget the vows they swore to her and her father. I am an old man, but not so old that I will sit here meekly whilst the likes of you plot to steal her crown. And saying so, he rose to go. As to what happens next, our sources differ. Well, and then according to Septon Eustace, it's Sir Criston Cole opens his throat. But the Grand Maester says that Sir Otto Hightower led him back, you know, into the council chamber and then later on confined him to the black cells. So which is it? You know what I mean? Like, did Sir Criston Cole actually open his throat and call him a traitor and put an end to him? He wasn't resisting. You know, he wasn't,
right.
You know, so, Sir Otto Hightower had just said, do them no harm unless they're trouble. You know what I mean? So he's just an old man walking out of the chamber. Why would you just kill him right there? I feel like put him in the black cell. That's more likely what happened. And then he dies there. So, because he's never heard from again. So he does die, whether it's in the cell or if it's in, you know, at the blade of Sir Criston Cole. So.
Yeah. And then this chapter ends, right? This chapter ends with, well, it's Aegon becoming king, isn't it? Aegon the Third becomes king is how this ends. Yeah, this whole chapter skips over the Viserys. Like you don't really get any of Viserys. But see, and that's so this is one of the things we've talked about with Fire and Blood. And World of Ice and Fire is kind of the same thing. So you have this next chapter, right, which is the Dying of the Dragons, which we'll talk about next week. Mm-hmm. And so it and World of Ice and Fire, they jump around a lot in their storytelling because you hear about events that happen in the Dance of Dragons. You know, it's not like a set timeline. So, well, in this year, this happened. And then this year, this happened.
Oh,
it's
no.
Like, well, and then this guy dies later on, and it's kind of all over the place.
Yeah, they kind of stop at several points and say, okay, at this point, it's important to tell you, you know, that this took place, and we'll come back to the story. So they do kind of step away several times. I guess, you know, just to wrap up this chapter here, you know, you have the small council meeting, which we just discussed, which is Beesbury's death. And then, as Sir Matt said, you got the coronation of Aegon the Second. So, you know, which is they basically crown him. Aegon's coronation was super fast. You know, it happens really quickly. The Dragon Pit is the site where that goes down. And Sir Criston Cole crowned Aegon, while Alison Hightower crowned Aegon's sister wife Helena. Right, so he's married to her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and that's, you know, that goes down rather quickly. And again, you've got the five Kingsguard who are here, and then there are two elsewhere. So on Dragonstone, Rhaenyra had learned about the death of her father and the betrayal of her siblings. And again, they're her siblings, which is crazy, right? Anger had made her go into labor, which lasted for 3 days. She was pregnant, forgot to mention that, and has a stillborn, you know, girl. She it does, you know, who dies. You know, so she swore revenge at that point. She swears revenge, and she kind of summons then her Black Council. So we learn about the Green Council first, and then we learn about the Black Council, you know, that's formed there on Dragonstone. And, you know, it's just her uncle husband, Daemon, which a lot of stuff happened with him, with his wives and different things. Eventually, they end up getting together. Her three eldest sons, by the way, which she was supposed to have with Laenor Velaryon, right, who might have not ever consummated the marriage. You know, there was that whole situation where these three, Jace, Luke, and Joffrey, look like Strongs. We've talked about that before, and that she may have given her maidenhood, you know, maidenhead to one of the Strongs. And so right, these kids right. might not actually be it was the big joke, you know, that they were called bastards and things. You know, so Daemon kind of takes them in as well there, you know. So yeah, that's essentially what happens in this chapter. It's just the setting up of all that, getting the councils ready to go, and then the war
really breaks out.
Yeah, and Prince Daemon strikes first, you know. And so when Targaryen draws Targaryen blood, that's basically when this bad boy will start. So
yeah, and you know the funny thing is that's how like the chapter. The World of Ice and Fire chapter, it starts right there. It's like, oh, boom, first thing, like the killing where he comes out of like the shadows and
yeah.
And so it's different. It's all just different. So how they end up doing it,
right? Yeah,
in the storytelling, which is super important to know. But okay, all right, Sir Ezra, I think let's move on over to the reread here.
Yeah, real quick, Sir Matt, I'll have some recaps on some of that stuff there at the end, just concerning like the. You know, the Kingsguard and what have you, some of that stuff, because you know that it's stuff that is extra, but it's not, I don't know, you know, it's stuff that's worthy of a mention maybe next time, just as we recap and go into the next bit.
Well, see, yeah, so this one's just more about, this chapter's more about like kind of the building of the sides, and then like once the war starts is really when you, okay, now we got to get this guy, talk about this guy,
I'll just prep folks in that it's actually probably going to be a larger maester study going forward, even if we pull just the main, you know, the big talking points. Because right now, I mean, after this, we get into battle after battle. You get into the alliances, knowing which side was on which side. And it is kind of cool and important to know, you know, because you look at the line as it continues on down. It's kind of cool and important to keep track of who was loyal to the Greens and who was, you know, loyal to the Blacks, even though they're reconciled at the end through a marriage with Aegon the Younger. You know, and one of the Greens, it's still kind of crazy to think about. So, all right, yeah, sorry. Yeah, let's hop into John.
Last week, we were Sansa 4. Mm-hmm. Sansa was locked in a room with Jane Poole. She didn't know didn't really know what was going on with her dad. Yeah. She thought Jane was kind of acting childish and had told her, and told her that she would go speak with Queen Cersei to let her see her father, but it didn't really seem to help. So this week we are in John 7. The last time we were with John, he was disgusted to learn that he would be a steward, not a ranger. Sam had convinced John that being the Lord Commander's steward is actually an honorable thing and meant in kind of to groom him for command. John and Sam are taken to the Godswood beyond the wall. They say their vows before the old gods and they find a human hand.
Yeah.
So this week, John 7. The bodies of two men that accompanied Benjen Stark are found. Sir Jeremy Riker blames wildlings, but Sam points out odd characteristics about the bodies. Back at Castle Black, John learns that King Robert is dead and his father is charged with treason. At dinner that night, Sir Alistair Thorne mocks John and his father, and John attacks him. That night, John finds the white of, the white, one of the dead men in Lord Commander's room. John kills the monster, saving the Lord Commander.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is where it gets real. You know, bring back in the, what's it called? The forward, right? Or whatever, the prelude,
yeah,
you know?
The intro, yeah, prelude, yeah.
So, I mean.
Prologue.
Yeah, the preface, whatever the heck it's called. Yeah, like because the others are, you know, this is clear evidence that they are like abounding, like they're out there beyond the mm-hmm. wall. I mean, at one point, what I took away from this chapter was that like they all want to say it, but none of them want to acknowledge that all the old tales they've heard are true. They feel like foolish men acknowledging that, you know, no one wants to say it's the work of the others. You know, they just don't want to say it. But like, man, Sam comes through clutch in this chapter too, pointing out some of those, as you mm-hmm. said, the odd characteristics about the bodies and you know, kind of, you know, shows us the value that he will add going forward. But
Well, the first word of this chapter, other, yeah. You know what I mean? Announcer Jamie Riker, beyond a doubt.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where it begins. And that is the thing. That kind of brings us back to the real threat mm-hmm. that we may face at some point, which is the others. Yeah. And the White Walkers.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. And so and we find out too that these men that they're looking at, right, were Benjen Stark's men, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's upsetting to them, and it's upsetting, you know. John's thinking, I was going to go with him on that ranging. I could have been this could be yeah. one of these men could have been me.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah. And it's what they're looking at.
Yeah, my uncle's men, John thought numbly. You remember how he'd pleaded to ride with them? Gods, I was such a green boy. If he had taken me, I might be lying
yeah.
here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Kind of crazy to think about. But they're looking at, you know, at the end of the, as you said, the last point of view chapter with John is, you know, Ghost returns with the human hand in his jaws, and it's Jafer's right wrist. You know, it ended in ruin, torn mm-hmm. flesh, splintered bone left by Ghost.
Right.
Yep. Jaws. Why, by the way, I mean, does Ghost tear that hand off? You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question.
Does he just want to bring it to their attention?
Maybe,
you know?
Well, maybe he meant to like drag it over and it just kind of broke apart.
Yeah, maybe. Because he's not, you know, Ghost is not scared like the dogs. You know, we'll learn that when they brought the hand back, they actually tried to get the scent. They go back out and they're trying to get some of the dogs to figure out where Ghost got this hand from. But it's Ghost who ends up just leading them there, right? You know, because he's the only one who isn't afraid of these corpses. So, but, yeah. So anyways, you know, the old bear, gods have mercy. The old bear muttered,
right.
He swung down from his garen, handing his reins to John. And, you know, the dogs, as we said here, the dogs liked it least of all. The horses did not like the feel of the place. You know, it made them nervous. They're rolling their eyes, backing away. Later on, they can't even get the horses to pull this corpse. You know, they have to fashion like they cut off some of the limbs and make I don't know what it is, like a way in which they can carry the bodies back. You know,
right? Yeah, yeah, because they're freaked out and spooked and kind of spooked by it,
right.
and stuff like that. Yeah, and then, you know, it's interesting because then we get back to like they're taking it back, and then John has the Winterfell dream again.
Yeah. Right.
He's wandering an empty castle, searching for his father, descending into the crypts, only this time the dream had gone further than before.
Mm-hmm.
In the dark, he'd heard the scrape of stone on stone. When he turned and saw the vaults were open one after another, all the dead kings came stumbling from their cold, black graves. John had woken in pitch dark, his heart hammering. Even when Ghost leapt onto the bed to nuzzle his face, he could not shake the deep sense of terror. He dared not go back to sleep. Instead, he climbed the wall and walked restless.
Yeah.
And he's like, I am a brother of the Night's Watch now, not a frightened boy.
Right, right. My question is to Lord Adam Parker, what is going on in the crypts?
Yeah.
You know, what is going on down there? Because, you know, he was going to do some research on that, and I think he's going to come back with a solid raven for us to discuss. I mean, right there, John keeps dreaming about this. These tombs are opened. You know, the dead seemingly are coming forward, and now we have, you know, Jafer here. His eyes are blue, and they debate whether or not how long he's been here because of the whether he's, you know, the smell, the rot is not there like it should be, mm-hmm. according to Sam, you know, and the corpse just doesn't look like a normal dead corpse would look. You know, it's been preserved.
Yeah, he talks about the coagulation and it's funny when Sam is explaining it too, because you can tell he's like really he's having like a really hard time. The audiobook does a really good job. This is one of Rhoda Treese's like one of my favorite moments, because you can tell he's just like really taking his time to get it out and stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So they go back and forth. You know, I mean, there's a little tidbit where Mormont is kind of, you know, he's harping on what's the guy's name, Riker. Sir Jarmy, right? Like, how are these men this close to the wall and we don't know about it? You know, how is it that they were slain this close and like
that's all the further they made it out.
Yeah. Is that the case? Yeah, is that the case? So he's kind of like, you know, and Sir Jarmy kind of says that, like, well, you know, we don't have the men to patrol out as far as we used to. He's like, but this isn't that far. You know, how is it that we didn't see this? And then he says the man has a horn. You know, surely he would have blown a horn.
Yeah.
You know, like why wouldn't we have heard that? And so I believe, you know, I think like others that
he wasn't able to.
That, you know,
he was just killed so quickly.
Yeah, or that, yeah, he was either killed so quickly, or I kind of believe this guy right now is playing dead, air quote playing dead. Right, he looks dead. His eyes are open. They keep talking about they're open.
Wow.
And they're blue,
okay.
And he's playing dead, and he's actually, he had, you know, I believe Benjen went much further, because they said this is two of his what, five men that went with him. So they're
right.
Or maybe
right.
four, and there's a couple more, maybe possibly with Benjen, and later on they want to find out what happened to Benjen. You know, Mormont's just sort of like, we've got to get more. He's like, take some of the hunters, take some of the stewards, patrol these woods, find the other bodies, or find the men. You know, they deserve to come with us and either be burned or buried or whatever. And it's like, this thing rises later. You know, it rises right up. So why didn't right now? As I like what you said, is that Ghost was trying to pull it back to them. And it just, he ripped his hand off, you know, but these things are just zombies, you know, they're like, you know, and it's just waiting for the command to rise. It's the Trojan horse, you know, it was doing this to get into near the Lord Commander so that way it could strike and get control and basically open the gate, you know, to let them in.
It's a Trojan horse, essentially.
Yeah. Which,
so, right, so here's a question though. So, if we go kind of with kind of the Benjen is Cold Hands theory, so does that mean that he was attacked like right out the gate?
Yeah, I don't know. I think they actually went much further north, and what I actually think these two guys traveled back under the command of the, whether you want to call it the Great Other or the Night King or whatever, and lay here, because you know what they noticed? They said there's no blood here. How did this corpse get here?
Right. Yeah, they would have had to have been there for a good while.
They don't see any blood. Sam brings it up. He's like, there's no, this can't be where this person died. There's a big slash in his neck, and there's like a, you know, places where, when, like the blood, even as Ghost had ripped its hand off, Jaffer's hand, there's no staining. You know, it's like dried up blood. It's like weird. You know, it's definitely different than what they're used to seeing. And so, they're all kind of mystified as to how it got here, but I also don't think they saw any tracks anywhere either. You know, they don't talk about that.
You know, it also should say something about the power of the wall, because now, you know, because we're not entirely sure of whether it's just the height of the wall, or if there is still some sort of like magic in the books, at least, right? Because in the show we see the Night King fly a dragon over and tear down the wall, but in the books, we know that, you know, Queen Alicent has a hard time getting, she can't get her dragon to fly above the wall.
Yeah.
So, but here we have a situation where a white goes through the wall and is able to still have his zombie kind of powers, you know, like on the other side of it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And is it like the knights, like they had to take him through? Is that passageway that they went through?
Right. Right, so like, because it seems from what we've seen from the show, right? Like, it seems like the Night King is pretty damn powerful,
yeah,
and you know, pretty pretty, you know, pretty sweet. So if Mance Rayder can, you know, get an army that can climb the wall, why can't the Night King?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 Good. Yeah. Good point.
Maybe he just hasn't been able to build an army big enough until now.
Yeah, that could be.
Maybe that's part of Craster's baby, like, thing. Yeah. He's just trying to assemble a big enough army to be able to do
right,
it.
Right. Right. Yeah. That definitely could be. I just want to read real quickly. I kind of jumped way ahead here, and I want to move us on because I want to see the part with the blood is interesting. Because okay, Mormont says, you know, okay, how long ago did this guy die? And the guy says, it must be a recent kill within a day or two. And Sam, that's when Sam, as you said, says no, and he has a hard time talking about it. He's like, my lord, it can't be a day. Look, the blood. Yes, Mormont growled impatiently.
Right.
Blood, what of it? He soiled his small clothes at the sight of it. They're making fun of him, right? Sam mopped the sweat on his brow. You can see where Ghost, John's direwolf, you can see where he tore at the man's hand, and yet the stump hasn't bled. Look, he waved his hand. My father, Lord Randall, made me watch him dress animals and what have you. A fresh kill, the blood, if it were a fresh kill, the blood would still be flowing, my lords. Later it would be clotted like a jelly, thick and he's kind of trailing off. This man, look at his wrist. It's all crusty, dry like.
Right.
So he's saying this is not recent. There's no blood, laying around. There's no blood flowing out. There's no maggots. They go on to say that. There's no worms or anything. He's been lying.
Right, not decaying.
Yeah, they've been lying here in the woods for how long? Untouched by dogs, by other creatures. You know, critters didn't come, take the flesh. Other even wolves. You know how later on, like anybody who dies, like the right. wolves are just, chowing down. So these creatures being left alone. It's just all wrong.
Yeah. So there's all kinds of things wrong and weird about
right.
it.
Right. So I'm under the belief that this now it would be a white. It has actually walked somehow or traversed all the way this close to the wall to be found by the Night's Watch to be brought, into beyond the wall or back through into the Seven Kingdoms for an assassination attempt, which just shows you that the others are more clever than we think, and there's more of a, there's more to them. I can't get the image out of my mind when we first started, back with the very beginning, the first chapter, the preface, just that they were laughing and they were toying with those men of the Night's Watch. They were evil and they were smart and intelligent and playing with their prey, type of thing. So they know what they're doing here, and this white is under their control. And they should have burned it right there. I mean, they should have. And actually, several of the men actually call for a burning, but it's Commander Mormont wants Maester Aemon to take a look at him, right?
Yeah.
So, oh boy. Again, you get another bit with old Nan's tales. John thinking back, like, this just can't, There's just
no
way, we don't need to read all that. It's just pretty cool. And there is the click, 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 of her needles, right? So people have talked about the spider, click, click, click.
Right.
None of the others, she just kind of, again, cold and dead. They came, hating iron and fire, the touch of the sun, every living creature, with hot blood in its veins, hold fast in cities and kings and men all fell before them as they moved south on a pale, dead horses, leading hosts of the slain. They fed their dead servants on the flesh of human children. Well, wow, they fed their dead servants on the flesh of human children.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. I mean, we see in the show that they're turned, right?
Right. Yep.
They fed their dead servants on the flesh of human. That's weird. Sorry.
Yeah. No, that's fine. That's fine. Yeah. And so, it's kind of a weird chapter because you have like this setup and then you kind of go back to like the main kind of story and then you get back to like this side of the story. So, kind of moving into like the second part of this is that, John, Mormont gets a letter and he has John come into his chamber to talk to him. And this is where he's telling him,
something's up.
Let me see here. Like Donal Noy says something, like the gods be with you. And John's like, I don't know what it is. But as he's as he's going up there. He gets there and he's like, the king's dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, John's stunned. You know, he's like, how could you know, you know, all of this stuff. And they talk about, he was your father's friend. He's like, they were closest brothers once. He's like, but that's not really like the, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm.
there's
the,
more
the news. The news is that like your father's been, you know, branded as like a traitor, yeah. you know, and that he, right. And that he, you know, he's been arrested.
Yeah. Which John just can't believe, you know, I mean, everyone is kind of looking at him. And I think it's well known in the realm that Eddard Stark went to war with his air quote brother, Robert Baratheon, and won him the crown.
Right.
You know, so like, I think everyone, including, you know, even though Alistair Thorne kind of like has that smirking grin. He just likes to see John in pain, you know, he just likes to see him suffer. But I think even he would say there's more to this. There's way more to this.
Absolutely.
That's
yeah.
kind of why they're, you know, everyone's kind of giving him that look of sympathy and like, boy, this is not good, you know, and there's something treacherous going on in King's Landing. But, you know, the old Baird says it's none of our concern. You know, we need men. We need men up here, and if there's a new king, we need to reach out to that king. So they're actually, what's really cool about this, now, don't forget, you know, we have the White who has been brought into Castle Black, but John is at this conference, and they start to talk about the idea that Eddard Stark could end up coming to the Wall, you know, as one of the men, and to take the Black, you know, which I think is super cool. Would have been cool to, you know, we wish that would have happened, you know, but it
yeah.
doesn't. So,
no,
it's just, you know, John, I mean, John's thinking about it kind of like, wow, this is, you know, that could happen. And he's hoping that Joffrey would spare him. And, you know, the old Bear, we need men of Eddard Stark's caliber here at the Wall. We really need them. So, yeah. Also, the Crow, it's fun to pay attention to the Raven, I'm sorry, you know, calling out corn. And the things that, you know, that the Raven calls out throughout this chapter, you know, very, again, the Blood Raven connection is all there. Mm-hmm. Three-Eyed Crow connection.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So, but yeah.
Well, there may be a bigger connection too. So as we get to the end, yeah. where, you know, John has to fight the right. White, which we already talked about a little bit, but so essentially, you know, John gets the news and, you know, like it sets him up for this confrontation with Sir Alistair Thorne.
Yeah, when he's down in the hall, he went to seek out his friends, and he's warned by Jorah Mormont. You know, just to Jorah Mormont,
yeah.
you know, to not do anything foolish, right? You know,
right. And he's probably thinking like right off.
Yeah, I bet he was.
Like that's more of his line. Like, you know, don't do anything right. foolish. Like ride south. You're man of the Night's Watch
right,
now.
Right.
Yeah, but that type of thing. I don't think anybody in, you know, anticipated that, you know, he's going to attack Sir Alistair
uh-huh,
Thorne.
Yeah. Yep. And so let me just read that little bit here. So, as he's just walking through, kind of thinking about, he's my father, you know, even though Lord Commander says this is your duty. Once he finds his friends, well, he walks outside and he says, they know, John realized. My father is no traitor, he said hoarsely. Even the word stuck in his throat as if to choke him. The wind was rising, and it seemed colder in the yard than it had been when he'd gone in. Which, a part of that is because of what they brought in, you know, and also it's just the feeling.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
The silent presence of the direwolf gave him comfort. Let's see. Oh, the girls do not even have that much, he thought. Their wolves might have kept them safe, but Lady is dead and Nymeria is lost. They're all alone. By the way, how does he know that? I don't remember how he knows that. Anyways, I'll get back to that. A north wind had begun to blow by the time the sun went down. And so, again, we skip on down here where he finds his friends. His friends rallied to him. We asked the Septon to light a candle for your father. It's a lie. We all know it's a lie. Even Gren knows it's a lie. Pip chimed in. You know, Gren nodded. And you're my brother now. You know, this is Sam saying. So he's my father, too. If you want to go out to the Weirwoods and pray to the old gods, I'll go with you. And he knows that's tough for Sam to want to go do that because, you know, he's afraid of going beyond the wall.
Yeah.
So yeah, and then this is where they're sitting there in the hall. And then he heard laughter, a sharp, cruel, sharp and cruel as a whip, the voice of Sir Alistair Thorne, not only a bastard, but a traitor's bastard. You know, he was telling the men all around him. In the blink of an eye, John had vaulted onto the table, dagger in hand. Pip made a grab for him, but he wrenched his leg away, and then he was sprinting down the table, kicking the bowl from Sir Alistair's hand. Stew went flying everywhere, splattered his brothers. Thorne recoiled. People were shouting, but John did not hear them. He lunged at Sir Alistair's face with a dagger, slashing at those cold, black eyes, but Sam threw himself between them, and before John could get around him, Pip was on his back, clinging like a monkey. You know, and then, you know, Gren grabs him while Toad wrenched the knife from his fingers. I mean...
Yeah, and then, Jorah Mormont walks in and says, I told you not to do anything stupid, boy.
Right. Yeah, and really, I mean, come on, you know, Sir Alistair Thorne is and he knows, the old bear knows that he's you know, digging at him and stuff like that, but you've got to be above that. It's hard, but there's going to be people who, you know, are going to taunt you. So, anyways, yeah, let's skip on, though, too. I mean, eventually all that kind of settles down, right? And he's put in his chambers. I think they put a guard outside of his door, didn't they? Right? Yeah, they do. They put a guard outside of his door, and it's that, you know, he gets really kind of concerned at what he's hearing outside of his door, and he goes out to check, you know, on the guard, and his head is just, like, you know, broken. I mean, his neck's broken, and his head's spun back, and it's like, what? You know, because he's near the old bear. I mean, he's his steward. So
he's still near Lord Commander's tower. He's like, you know, the guard. He thought they left a man to guard my door. Ghost smells him through the door. That's all it is, right? In hearing, you know, it's like the dire wolf crept backwards. It's fear rising. Then that's when John kind of gets up and he can't. You know, this is Lord Commander's tower. It's guarded day and night. This couldn't happen. It's a dream. I'm having a nightmare.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep, it's kind of crazy. Yeah, so he goes in there, and as he moves in, there's the shadow lurking in you know, right outside of Jorah Mormont's quarters, you know, and the raven's in there, you know, screaming, you know, corn and what have you. Ghost goes in, he kind of opens one of the blinds, right, and so moonlight kind of shines in, and he sees, you know, you know, he sees the white, you know, and fights it. Essentially, you guys, I mean, they do a good job in the show, really kind of.
The show does a really good kind of depiction of this. You know, it's funny though, when he's going in, he's hearing the raven freaking out. It's like corn, you know.
Yep. Yeah. So Arthur, you know, he thought was dead, and he's not dead. You know, you know, that's, he's just shocked by it, right? So, and he felt.
Yeah, he's like, God's, he's dead. He's dead. I saw him dead.
Right. And the hand, man, the hand is also still working. It's still moving. And.
Yeah, the arm was crawling up his leg, ripping at wool and flesh. He pries the fingers off. You know, there's no blood. One arm. Let's see here. He gets I'm trying to figure out see exactly where it is here. It's like the dead other slammed into him, knocking him off his feet. His breath was taken out of him. He tries to shove it off, but it's too heavy.
Yeah,
like John tries to do everything right. He's like he even tries to bite it, to punch it, try to breathe. Then it's like suddenly the corpse's weight was gone. His fingers ripped from his throat, and all John could do was roll over, retching and shrieking. Ghost had it again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so he goes back and forth. You know, Othor's, you know, also kind of big too, and he's struggling with him. And then at one point, you know, even has his, as you said, his hands around Ghost's, you know, neck and what have you. So they're going back and forth. You know, corn is happening. And then eventually, the old bear walks out, and the flames flickering in his lantern there. And the raven starts to yell, you know, burn, burn, burn.
Right.
You know, so crazy. Actually, it's the oil lamp, you know, that ends up saving them. They toss it, and it goes, it kind of lights the, what do they call it? The blind, or the, you know, the sheet covering the window, whatever. And that's what they end up grabbing and throwing on the white to kill it, to let it burn. You know, he's praying there, let it burn. He prayed as the cloth smothered the corpse. God, please, gods, please, please let it burn. Because they were really struggling with it. I mean, it was overpowering John and and Ghost, and you know, so yeah, that's it's an intense scene.
And of course, in this chapter, we don't get it, but we the next chapter, you know, this is a big deal because John gets a reward for this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah. So we'll get there. The hand is interesting to pay attention to as well. So the Ghost has the hand in his mouth there as well. But
yeah, you know, it's interesting in the show. It's like a hand is what they show Cersei first, right? Remember, isn't it the thing that's like kind of moving and twitching?
Yeah, I think so.
It's right at the dragon.
Oh,
pit
yeah.
Scene,
oh,
I'm pretty sure.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. I don't remember where they got that necessarily, but yeah. So anyways, I mean, some of the cool takeaways there are just that, like, you know, you see John more and more, I think, just being accepted by his brothers, you know, and then Jorah Mormont kind of looking out for him, you know, they're closer. Sam kind of steps
right,
up.
Right.
He's more intelligent. We now know, I mean, the what was unspoken between all of the Rangers and the, you know, Men of the Night's Watch there is that the others, they talked about when they were coming back to the wall, Sir Matt, they, you know, they heard the long sound of the horn, one blow, you know, meant to, you know, that it was Rangers returning, and John thinks to himself that he's a Ranger, come back, and the, you know, two blows, you know, would be
wildlings,
yep, and then three would be the others. So it's interesting he has that thought as they're, you know, carrying a a white, you know, through the wall. So it's crazy. All right. Yeah, so any other cool connections, Sir Matt?
Nope.
Yeah.
Nope.
Okay.
That's kind of it for it. All right. As Sir, do we have a raven?
Yeah, I think we'll just do just this one. We'll save we've got a nice a decent sized raven here that I put two in here, but I think now it's just time. We'll just do Lady Krista's raven. I went back and I was looking just through our ravens that we didn't get to in Raven's Nest. We've got some really, really good ravens coming up for the next Raven's Nest. And by the way, Lord Hunter, you know, you'll get the personal message next time. He's like, what? I thought it was, you know, coming up later.
Yeah.
So we'll try to also send out a message on Patreon, too. Next time, I think we post in the Facebook group, but then he's not, you know, a Facebook guy necessarily. So, you know, I'll post on Patreon, make sure I get that message out to everybody because we need all of our bannermen when they can make it. So, he sent us a cool message, just like the banners were called, man. It's so cool. You know, he's just like, it was neat to hear everybody talking and discussing. So, shout out to him. But Lady Krista here sent us just a real short raven. It just says, you know, has it been speculated that Bran is the lone wolf that dies, giving the other three, you know, making the other three the pack who survives. And I thought that was kind of interesting, just the idea that, like, you know, it's been talked about that the lone wolf, you know, dies while the pack survives, you know, and is there a, you know, correlation between some of the Starks, which one of them would be the lone wolf? You know, I think sometimes people think John and Ghost were kind of the outsiders, right? I mean, John, you know, I mean, he was, you know, Ghost was the runt of the pack, right? But, you know, Lady Krista's kind of, you know, saying maybe Bran is that lone wolf, you know, who ends up dying and the other ones will survive.
Yeah, I don't think Bran's going to survive.
You don't? Yeah.
No, I think he's kind of the easy person to kill because I don't know what he offers.
Yeah, going
like outside, going forward.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't think Ghost, like, you know, planning. I mean, you know, he can barely finish his main series before we could start thinking about is there going to be something in the future after this? You know, in the event they ever wanted to go that route, I think obviously going into the past is the way to do it.
Right.
But you like after this, what does Bran, you know, like offer? Mm-hmm. He's just some guy with a bunch of magical power. You know what I mean? So to me, it's like, I think Bran dies, whether it's a sacrifice or he, like, if you go with the whole he is the Night King thing, and maybe Jon has to kill him, or somebody has to kill him, or something. To me, Bran is. I don't think he's surviving me till.
Yeah,
the
I
end.
Mean that makes sense with what you said earlier. You were talking about how you thought, you know, Jon Snow is someone who will survive. You know,
right?
I think you've believed that for a long time, just because of what we've seen in the show and in the book series, just him being brought back to life, the Battle of the Bastards, you know, all of that would lead, you know, you think it's just that if he's going to survive. So I see, you know, with Lady Krista's thought here, that Bran does seem to kind of, especially in the show, be less and less a Stark, you know, not not connected to them anymore, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't. And by the way, I don't remember, because the show, I've tried to, I'm going to do a rewatch all at once on the show, but I've been really trying to stay heavy in the books here for now. But Sir Matt, refresh me. Does Bran's direwolf, it's still alive, right? Summer in the show?
We don't know. I think it dies. I think it dies when he's leaving during the big Hodor moment.
Okay. Okay. See, I couldn't. That's what I was trying to remember. Because that direwolf would be what would maybe bring him back or keep him connected, I think, to the Starks and to, you know, whether it's the old gods or whatever, you know. So I was just wondering about that in the show. I couldn't remember, you know, because even, you know, at that point then.
Yes. Yeah, he dies. He dies during that moment.
Okay,
yep.
Gotcha. Yeah. And then, because I keep talking about in the book, you know, even Catelyn Stark is talking about how that the connection to those direwolves and the marriage that takes place, you know, between a warg and his direwolf and his wolf, especially a direwolf, right, is so strong, you know, that I think it can help Bran. It keeps him in the light. It keeps him, you know, it's a part of who he is, I guess, you know, it's at his foundation, his core. And so when that dies, that connection to warg into,
yeah,
not that he couldn't into other, you know, wolves and what have you, but this is his direwolf, you know. So if that happens in the book,
yeah, there's only two wolves left, Nymeria, yeah, and Ghost. Ghost.
Yeah. Ooh, wow, interesting. So, anyways, but as far as the Starks are, you know, concerned, there, you know, we have, well, and again, the other three as the pack who survive. So, what would the three be there, Sir Matt? You know, you've got Sansa and Arya. Do we consider, well, yeah, Jon is a, you know, I mean, if depending if you're going with R plus L equals J, right, he's that,
right,
that Stark, you know.
Right. Yeah, yeah. So, huh, yeah, and in the books, though, it may be totally different. Like, I could see Rickon surviving,
yeah,
in the books.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, that would be interesting. Yeah. I hope he does.
I think that one could be done quite,
yeah,
different.
I honestly hope he does in the books, you know, survive and make it. So, anyways, yeah, Lady Krista, thanks. I mean, if anybody else has any thoughts on that, I don't. That's the, when I saw that. That's not anything we have talked about, really. You know, we don't really talk a lot about whether Bran does live or die. I mean, I know Sir Matt has, but I'm kind of on the fence. I don't really know what's going to happen with Bran, and I'm hoping it's different than what we see in the show, because I've always thought Bran.
Well, the books, there's still so much to go with.
Yes, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
He's kind of becoming the Three-Eyed Raven. That whole getting attacked thing may not even happen.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Right.
May not happen. Right.
Right. Well, and I also, I'm just a huge fan of Mira Reed. I love Mira. Like,
right.
I'm, you know, huge crush on Mira Reed. All right. So, you know, I was rooting for her and Bran, you know, some sort of connection. But I mean, when I saw on the show, just the way he's changed and stuff, I'm like, oh boy, you know, this is, I don't know that I like this, but I mean, that's what Ger does to us, you know. He leads us down this one path where we think, oh, this is going to be awesome, epic get-together, you know, cool whatever, and then next, it's not what we expect, you know. So,
yeah.
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 All right, well, hey, send those ravens to btkcast@gmail.com. We had a great Ravens Nest last time. It was a lot of fun. If you're one of our patrons, you can listen to that. You can type comments in there. If you're one of our bannermen, you can participate. You'll be, you know, your voice will be heard on the podcast. And we've had really good thoughts. You know, everybody just brings, you know, textual references, you know, from the show. And it's fantastic. It is a huge series with a lot of history to it. And it's a lot to keep track of. So, and that's why we rely on our bannermen to kind of keep us informed on different things and to track down some of these theories and to remind us of things that have been hashed out on the Reddit, you know,
yeah,
thread for years.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
yeah, absolutely. So, all right. Well, Sir Ezra, it's time to man the wall here,
yeah,
and give a shout out to some of our patrons. I want to make sure we get everyone in there, because there was somebody who had sent us a message saying, am I in there? Because they had updated their patrons, and I think you have them in here. So
yeah, I think I do. Yeah, we just updated the doc. Yeah, I got yeah, that is funny. So we have Lord Thanos of House Titan, right? So I make sure mm-hmm. one of our newest yes. members, and so we huge shout out to Lord Thanos. Glad that we have him as one of our bannermen. Lord Jason of House Ross. By the way, a package is on the way just for you, so you know that. A little something we forgot to send him, Sir Matt and I, so I've set that up this week. Okay. Yeah, it's something from one of the other shirt orders.
Yeah.
Yep. We've got Lady Amanda of House Richardson, Lord Adam the Young Bull of House Parker, Sir Peter of House Whittingham, who again was on the last Raven's Nest, just awesome conversation there. The Ghost of Harrenhal, who is working on a secret project, who is... the ghost and I have been in conversation, and, I have the ghost tracking down a few different leads and theories and yeah. what have you for me. So, and then also our captain of the guard, by the way, Lord Hunter the Foulmouthed. So,
he's our Facebook moderator, so he will keep everybody in line yeah. on the Facebook group. Not that we've ever had to do that, but in the event we ever do.
we probably never will. It's just kind of funny to say, hey, man, you know, we got Lord Hunter. We'll seek, you know, we'll sick him on you if we have to. So he's one of the nicest guys and super chill and fun to talk to. So we enjoy, you know, his fellowship. So, all right. Well, you know, all that, you know, Patreon stuff can be found at patreon.com/bendtheknee. Bunch of rewards on there. We're done today. Sir Matt and I are recording some Green Dreams, some musings this week. We're working on some audio stuff so we can do some, you know, kind of in the car on the way home from work conversations as well too. So should be a lot of fun. So
yeah, absolutely. So all right, guys. Well, we want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. Next week we will be discussing chapter 53, Bran 6.
Yeah. If you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com.
We will see you in a week, and remember that winter is coming.